Hello, and welcome back to another episode of your favorite political podcast. It's your boy, Day.
And I am David, and together we are Call Me Limbo. We actually have a sponsor this week for this episode. So before we start talking, we're going to go to our ad sponsor, and we'll be right back. This episode of Call Me Limbo is brought to you by late stage capitalism. Because everything is becoming prohibitively expensive, except $7 million Super Bowl commercials for corporations. Late stage capitalism. At what point can we opt out? And we're back.
Yes. Yeah. Super Bowl.
Did you watch?
I did. I feel like I'm becoming like a sports gay. I've really been consistent, and because before I would just watch like the opening and then the halftime, but lately I've actually been invested in the game.
Really,
the past few years. So I was very happy that the Chiefs won. Yep. Usher's halftime performance was incredible. Again, I always say, put some respect on that man's name. Stop trying to act like he's not the king, because he is. He's a one of a one. That man got on that stage for 15 minutes. I think it was a record. I think it was the longest they allowed, because he added like 2 minutes. He sang, he danced around. He had like four costume changes, which like seldom ever happens with the men. And more importantly, that man had his mic on the entire time. I could not believe it that he sang live. I'm talking about going from upbeats to ballads. And I'm just like, the man is a consummate professional. Like, there's genuinely, like, the way people talk about Beyonce being the queen, they need to have that same reverence for Usher as the king. Like, it truly was amazing to see the work that he put in and to celebrate him. And he also got married that day. So it was a whole shebang. Yeah, him and his girlfriend. So I was really, it was just seemed like a wonderful time. All the celebs are already there. So I was like, oh, that makes sense. The most watched Super Bowl of all time. I think it was like 123 point something million. They said there's a new way that they calculate like viewers or something. So they estimated that it could have gone up to like 200 at one point. I don't understand the averaging thing, which would have put it, using those numbers, I think it does put it as the most watched thing in cable television. Because originally, I think it was one of the space launches, like rocket launches for space. I think that was the winner. I think it was like at 130 to 150 million back in like the 60s or something like that. But yeah, I was like, wow, it's crazy. But yes, I know we have to let you rant about the spending of the monies. It's funny too, because I read in the article about it being watched by so many people. They talked about the fact that that's how they can justify, to advertisers at least, to spend that amount of money. And I remember when I saw, I think the 7 million per 30 seconds.
If I'm not mistaken. Yes.
Because I remember when I saw the Beyonce Verizon commercial, I actually missed it during the live showing, but my friends had sent it to me. I was like, oh, what is this? I said, first of all, it was not short. And more importantly, I said, to book Beyonce to do a Verizon commercial, I know they paid out the wazoo. Yeah. But I said it was a mutually beneficial situation, because of course at the end she says drop the music, and that was when she released her single. So I was like, wow.
Yeah, her country single, right?
Yeah, her country songs. And so I said, to have Usher have like a 15 minute pretty much commercial of like him and his music. I know that tour about to sell out. I'm trying to get a ticket because I would love to see Usher live. I've never seen him live. And Beyonce using that moment to announce her music. Who else? I'm trying to remember.
Wasn't Alicia Keys? Did Alicia Keys show up in
featured in it. Yeah, okay. She featured in it briefly. She did part of one of her songs that I think they technically did do a remix of that not everybody remembers, of If I Ain't Got You. But then they also did My Boo, which was a really nostalgic moment to just think back on that. She looked incredible. People were teasing her because like when she started, she like, it's not like she got her voice cracked, which is like, y'all, whatever. But when they posted the video, though, that post-production, won't no crack, baby. I said, oh, no, that's right. She said, thanks. and so Reba McEntire looked great. I said it's always good to see Reba. You know, she's just one of them people. I feel like you just like Reba. It's nothing. Yeah. Like, hey, Reba.
Kind of like Dolly Parton. That's kind of how I feel about Dolly. Yeah.
I love Dolly Parton.
Icon. Yeah.
Legend. Okay. And then Post Malone did America the Beautiful, a beautiful rendition of it, actually. I often forget his skill set as a vocalist, like as a singer, not just the rapper. So it was really, really nice. And Andra Day did Lift Every Voice and Sing, aka Black National Anthem, did a great job too. So I had no issues with this Super Bowl in terms of, it was a great game too. Cause I think they said this is the longest cause it went into overtime.
Right.
Like I was stressed. That's how I knew I was like, oh, I'm becoming a sports game. Like I was stressed watching that. And I was like, ugh, but they won. So
yeah.
More football.
That's cool.
Probably need for the rest of the year.
That's all right. Yeah. I actually did not watch a minute of it. Normally I will watch just the halftime show, but I was like, I didn't even watch that. I still haven't watched it. So I was like, your like validation of it and like kudos of it. It was like, I'll have to go find it and watch it.
I'll send it to you.
Okay. Yeah, please do.
But you told me something that was happening at the same time that I was unaware of, because while I was watching the Super Bowl, I was simultaneously doing schoolwork and trying to review all this information. And you sent me something that I think is important to talk about.
Oh, yeah. Israel started bombing Rafah, which is along like the Egypt border. And it's the place where Israel said that the fleeing Palestinian civilians could have like refuge. That was supposed to be their like home base. And literally it was like almost at the same time, supposedly, as the commercial that aired during the Super Bowl that Israel put out about like bring home our dads or something. So, yeah. So it was like, it was very intentional. According to the comments on Instagram videos, I don't know how intentional it actually was, but people are saying that there was probably intention there. So yes. So again, the border is not open to flee. And now, over 1 million people are in this, I believe mostly it's the most densely populated area on the planet now is what I believe I saw. And so, yeah, so it's like, it's just,
do we label them a terrorist group at this point? Like at what point does the IDF become a terrorist organization? Because this, when you told me that, like it genuinely infuriated me because of the reasons you said, the fact that while over 100 million people were distracted, you took the time to rain terror on these people after we had the story come out of that six-year-old little girl and her cousin and her family in the car being murdered because there was no fighting with Hamas there. So it was like, y'all did this on purpose. And then the people who went to rescue her 3 hours later, because they had to get permission to do it. Even after they get permission, they come, they've already killed the girls and they kill the people, shoot up the people who were there. And to me at this point, I don't even sleep well thinking about it because it's just like, I can't imagine. And I think it's the part that's harder because even we know who's dying. Like we'll get pictures of that, but we're not seeing a lot of it in action, I feel like. And it's like, no, people need to one, see it because they need to reckon with what we're doing.
Yes.
And then people need to take it in psychologically and emotionally. These people, even if you survive, you will never be the same.
No.
Never. I have friends that were born in like during war times in other countries overseas. And they're just like, you have no idea just seeing they're going through how triggering it is because they said those are your most, to imagine that those are in your most formative years, like you're 4, 5, 6, all you remember are bombs.
Yeah.
And then worse, you see the canisters or what the bullets or whatever, the shells, and it says made in America or whatnot. This is crazy.
Yep. Well, and then you also think about like intergenerational trauma from generation after generation after generation. And that that becomes really heavy to carry. I think it's really interesting. Well, it's not interesting. It's sad that this is continuing to go on while we're distracted. The temporary ceasefire back in November happened to be around Black Friday weekend. So again, they wanted us to feel good about going and shopping and participating in consumerism. And again, that's exactly what happened on Sunday at the Super Bowl. Just continued to like be pushing commercials and consumerism on us. And it's really sad. I think what's also really interesting is we think about just not only international violence, but also like domestic violence here, violence happening here domestically. Mm-hmm. We're recording this on Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's Day, listeners.
Yes, happy Valentine's Day.
Yes.
Singles Awareness Day, whatever day you celebrate.
Yes.
If you've lost love, if you... You know, there's people you love or a partner that's no longer here. Know that we also love you and we wish you a day. We wish you a better day than your yesterday.
Yes.
So, hope you enjoy the day.
I like that. Mm-hmm. So, yes. That's much more uplifting than the next thing I was about to talk about. But also today... that happened is I'm like the Super Bowl winners, the Kansas City Chiefs, were celebrating their victory, and there happened to be a mass shooting at the victory party in Kansas City. At least one person is dead. I believe I saw the last numbers. There were 22 people injured. 8 of those people were children. It's really interesting too to see that the news here calls people under 18 children, whereas like Palestinians who have died, they are called minors or mm-hmm. people under the age of 18. So they're not referencing.
And they're not. And they don't say killed. They always say 3,000 dead.
Dead. Yep.
And it's like, well, how did they die? That's the most important part. Oh, you wanted to cut that out, but Israelis. Two Israelis killed by blank, which is horrific, terrible.
Yes.
But then you awful. Have 4,000 Palestinians killed in fire. Who started the fire? Billy Joel said it wasn't him. Mm-mm. So clearly, Lord forgive me, I'm not laughing at the people, but y'all know that's how I cope with dark things. But it's just like, I don't know, watching how media is manipulative with how intentional they can be when it comes to their words and framing and the manipulation that can happen to the mind via, I mean, propaganda, but rhetoric and how you choose to frame things. That's why I tell people, no, words are very powerful. I hate when people are like, oh, words don't mean anything and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, words are one of the most important ways that we create an opinion, a feeling, a connection with things, because it's like, oh, apple. This is an apple. It's a red apple. Red apples are sweet. This, but like you make so much on it. So when you're calling people, it's like calling people, oh, these illegal aliens. Like first and foremost,
yep.
Calling a human being an illegal alien is already just wild to me because it's such a weird word. I know what, you know, the history of what the word's supposed to mean, but it's just like, that's a weird thing to call people. But when you call them, you know, what they say, they're no different than dogs and animals and the dehumanizing language. Because once you dehumanize somebody, you recognize that it's easier to kill them and it's easier to not care about what's happening. So shame on the media in that regard.
I agree. Today, February 14th, Valentine's Day, also just happens to be the 6-year anniversary of the Parkland shooting in Florida. Yep. And so, again, like, can we just have a day with no violence? Like, I don't think that we know what peace is. Something that I thought was really interesting that is kind of related to all of this, at the Denver City Council meeting on Monday, February 12th, the city council voted on a ceasefire proclamation that... dozens of other cities in the country have voted to support that, say that they support a ceasefire in Palestine because our federal government isn't really doing anything. So like many local levels are getting involved to put out statements and to try to apply pressure to the federal government. Denver was hoping to be one of those cities that also was joining that proclamation. Unfortunately, on Monday, only 4 out of the 13 city council members voted for the ceasefire proclamation. Something that I thought was disgraceful. I am incredibly proud of the proclamation sponsors, Councilwoman Chantel Lewis and Councilwoman Sarah Parody. The other two people who voted for the proclamation were Council President Jamie Torres and Councilwoman at Large Serena Gonzalez Gutierrez. So kudos to them. Shame on the others. Yes. Shout out to them. Shame on the others. What I thought was interesting, though, too, is and the vote was done virtually because evidently the protesters or the audience in the chambers were too disruptive. Shame on them.
Did they have to state why they chose not to vote for it? Like, did they have to make an argument?
No.
Wow.
So, no, they don't. Some of them chose to give like a little speech beforehand. And it was very much like, I wish that this said that we could just come together as a people. And it was very much like white fragility, like feel good, kind of like, I wish that we could just come together, not so division.
But I am worried. Vote to stop the killing.
Literally. I'm like, the vote is in front of you. Vote to stop the killing. And like some people too were like, we just wish that there was peace. And one of the protesters said, we don't want peace. We want liberation. And I thought that that was a really good distinction because liberation a lot of times does not always go hand in hand with peace. Sometimes these systems and these mindsets need to be disrupted.
You're talking good now. See, now you're stepping in spicy territory. Look, now we really going to do that limbo dance because you're absolutely right. And I said, it's an ugly truth. And, you know, as somebody who does not like violence and all those things like that, I was like, there were slave rebellions that were violent. And you can feel how you want to feel about them. But when given, what do they say? If you make peaceful resolution inevitable, I'm sorry, peaceful revolution impossible, you make violent revolution inevitable. Mm. And that's pretty much the situation. I said, you know, I've said this, I think, before on the show. It's like, I don't think that Hamas was playing some 3D chess move with this, but it's like, you have shown the world who the IDF is. Like, you have shown they've been doing this for decades. It's not new. It's like, you know, they would just, as they would call it, mow the grass and just kill people in those areas. And, you know, they're peaceful times where they're trying to protest and also getting killed. And now, but nobody cared. It was like they were screaming into the ethos, and like nobody, it's like, oh, they're getting killed over there. Cool. And like, he was like, you might have heard a little thing or two. Oh, it's bad, you know, but you didn't really know. And then, unfortunately, this horrific thing, again, I don't condone what happened on October 7th, especially because there were civilians involved, but this thing happens. And then it's like a mic, everything is focused on them. And it's been interesting to watch the narrative and to watch how the story unfolds, especially given at what October 7th, totally understandable, you know, what happened to the Jewish people there is terrible, horrendous, call it out. But the October 7th, that at greater magnitude that has happened since then, not having the same level of compassion from the people in power, that's when I'm like, no, you've shown, people in power have shown who they are. Because no matter how many people, and I think that's what I was going to ask you with the city thing, what does it do? Is there any enforcement mechanism? Because it feels like we're saying no, 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 stop, stop, stop. To no avail. Like, and I think that's the worst part about how our government runs, is that the will of the people literally has little effect on what they pass. It's donors, it's people in power, it's military industrial complex, it's list them all. And I genuinely don't know how we stop this. Like, to me, it's already past the point of acceptable. It's been there since October 7th. But I don't know, where do we go from here? Like, peace isn't the point. Israel's made it very clear.
Yep.
They're going to kill these people.
Yep.
And I said, all those people who were like, well, they gave them a heads up. Nobody does that. They're silent. Now that Israel has done what we've been saying they were doing, encroaching more and more, killing people, even when they told them to go somewhere, nobody wants to take them in the neighboring cities. So we are literally watching. We are watching Freddy Krueger or Michael Myers, all these people come into the house, terrorize and kill the people.
Yeah.
And worst of all is that when the rubble is done and everything is out there, because first of all, we destroyed their cities, which I don't think people are taking into account. They have nowhere to go. It'll say made in USA. It will show who supported the slaughter of their entire ethnicity, their culture, their way of life. We are accomplices in this murder, in this genocide. And I don't know, that does not sit well with me. And it doesn't sit well, one, morally, but then there's no mechanism, I feel like. There's no emergency brake. And you just watch the crowd crash.
Yeah. I was thinking about, there was a, recently, within the last few days, there was an American Palestinian teenager who was killed in Israel. And so I was like, now,
yes,
now some of our, like, quote unquote, own have been killed. And I was like, are we going to stop? Are we going to call for an immediate, like, stoppage of this? I hope so. Over 80% of Democrats support a ceasefire, and over 60% of all Americans support a ceasefire. This side is note, not
that's really
controversial.
Republicans, that is that low on y'all side, but I'm gonna let that slide for right now.
Yeah, yeah, but no, I was like, this is not controversial, and I was like, I have this written in my "That's Like I Always Say" notebook, but I was like, something that I don't always say this. I've maybe said it once, but I was like, a watched pot eventually boils. And I was like, this has gone on for decades. And I was like, again, I'm not saying what Hamas did on October 7th is okay. I'm saying that it's understandable. I can understand why they did. When you are constantly under a microscope, or when there is pressure being applied to you in the form of oppression and marginalization, eventually people are going to respond. It's like a pressure cooker. And it's like, how much more can we continue to withstand when the pressure continues to be applied?
And yeah, it's like there's a sequence of events. Seeing a sequence of events, you can tell the inevitable outcome. And that was what it was. And worse is that when there were times of peaceful trying, it didn't work. And when there were times of violence, it's not working. So it's like, well, what do y'all want? And again, they don't have the support. Every time that they would go up to the World Council and they would say, hey, what Israel's doing is terrible, who would come in and save the day? America.
Yep.
And it's horrendous. I don't think America can ever say with a straight face or ever try to cling or claim the quote unquote moral authority in the world they used to try to have. I genuinely think it's laughable to think that that's possible anymore, because we have, throughout history, we've done terrible atrocities. And whether it be the Latin America, you know, different coups, taking over governments, etc. But this one, during the social media age and living color, Yeah, this is the one. This is the one for me. Doesn't mean that Israel. Oh, and worst of all, because they said, oh, you're not going to get something. America said something about they weren't going to give Israel's military if they didn't come up with a plan or something. And then they came up with a plan essentially requiring us to fund, I think it was the rebuilding of Gaza, rebuilding of that region, essentially. And I said, I know you lying. Mm-hmm. They are literally obliterating a place and then say, hey, y'all can pay for it to come to secure it and help it come back. Absolutely not. You did it. You need to pay it. Like, this should be treated the way and the irony that is about to come out of my mouth. The way that the world went about looking at Germany when it was Jews being annihilated in a Holocaust is the way that we should be looking at Israel as they commit a genocide on the Palestinian people.
Yeah.
Sorry, not sorry.
Yeah. A Holocaust on the Palestinian people.
Insane.
Yeah.
The once oppressed have now become the oppressor. And it's terrifying because unlike Germany, it doesn't seem like anyone cares.
No. It's wild to be seeing a genocide live streamed.
Yes.
Across my social media, and the U.S. federal government and the media, the corporate media industrial complex working overtime to try to get us to believe that, like, our eyes, that we're not seeing what our eyes and our ears and all of our senses are telling us. At the city council meeting, I don't know how it ended up this way with the seating chart, but I ended up getting stuck next to three Zionists who had a bunch of, like, signs, and, like, a couple of them spoke and they were a little rowdy. But what was really interesting is the people in front of me who were there in solidarity with the Palestinians said to them, I hope that you know that we would be here protesting and demanding a ceasefire if these actions were being committed against Israel. And I was like, it is true. It is true. And I'm like, when you believe in, like, the sanctity and the fragility of life, like, I don't think there's any gray area or ambiguity there. Like, you have to be consistent.
Yes.
And I'm like, there is not.
It's not personal.
No, it's not. And I'm like, there is no world in my mind where I could imagine going privately or publicly and announcing my support for, like, a genocidal regime.
Yeah.
I can't imagine doing that.
You can't pretend it's not at this point. Like, how many other languages or ways do you want them to say they're doing this on purpose? Like,
yeah,
they're not shy about it. They're saying it out loud. And we're just like, no, I didn't hear that.
Yeah.
Correct. Our leaders are like that.
That's true. Yes. There is a little bit of good news, though, in the anti-violence front. The Colorado legislature session started about a month ago, and a couple of bills that are being debated right now are around gun control legislation. So the Denver Post is reporting today, February 14th, that legislatures in Colorado are proposing a ban on the sale, transfer, and importation of quote-unquote assault weapons. The article goes on to define what they mean by assault weapons. Primarily, it's like high-capacity magazines. It's the ones that are being committed in these mass shootings. We know what they are. Colorado Public Radio is also reporting, they reported yesterday, February 13th, that there's also legislation being proposed here where people cannot carry firearms in government buildings, hospitals, churches, bars, public parks, rec centers, zoos, and at political rallies. And so I was like, I am encouraged that local legislators and state legislators here are doing, or at least attempting to do, something within their sphere of influence. I don't know if it will pass. I hope that it does.
It'll definitely get challenged.
We will see.
But
yeah, of course. Yeah. So I don't know what you think, if you have any thoughts on that.
No, I mean, like, I genuinely, I don't want to even say, oh, the Second Amendment, because it's like, you know that this is taken out of the context of what they were asking for it to be. But then it's like this, I mean, I'm sorry, almost this irrational fear of there's just going to be a insurgent coup from our government, and they're just going to come in and do all this stuff with the guns. It's like, well, that hasn't happened. But I can tell you what has happened. All these mass shootings, all these killings of people. Well, they define mass shooting as blah, blah, blah. Okay, all the people getting shot, like, it doesn't matter. I said, there's no reason our relationship with guns is probably, I will say that we need to truly take some time as a society to figure out why we have such an allegiance to violence the way that we do, whether it be through guns or any other way of communicating, because it doesn't have to be. We choose to, there are other countries that have guns just like we do, but they don't have this rate of killing because they have an understanding and they don't fear their neighbors. They're not doing the stuff that we're doing. And until we have leadership that's focused on that, that's able to unite and not, like I heard some, I think it was Sagar and Jetty on Breaking Point. Someone said, like, they think if Kamala Harris won, she would be the most, like, divisive president in the history. And I was like, listen, you know I ain't no Kamala Harris fan at all. But I was like, let's be genuine in person. We just went through 4 years of literally the most. Like, I tell people all the time, I think you recently said something to try to say something about uniting. And I laugh because I'm like, that's not Trump's gift. Like, literally, his skill is being divisive. He knows that. Like, and so yeah, even watching him pretend to want to be uniting is like wild to me, because Democrats bend over backwards, always trying to get this imaginary sector of Republicans that are quote unquote moderates. And like, even when I see people say they're moderates, like if I'm on a dating app or something like that, I automatically know they're BS, because I said,
yes, it's a polite way of saying that they're conservative.
Yes. I was like, our moderate in America is garbage. Now, yeah, if you say I'm an international centrist, then I'm like, oh, okay.
Okay, maybe.
The rest of the world is fine. But no, moderate here means you're right wing.
Yes.
If you're right wing, you're far right wing, you know? If you're liberal, you're central. It's like, there's no.
I would maybe say conservative light.
There you go. Diet conservative.
Diet conservative. Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, this is crazy to me that we sit here and allow shenanigans to go on. Like, even with the immigration stuff, I'm just like, I think it was, they were talking about the bill that they're trying to push through about like funding to Ukraine, funding to Israel, and they don't talk about it enough, like the $8 billion going to Taiwan, which is going to only agitate China. I sit back and I think, like, first of all, these people can't accomplish anything, because it's no longer about the result, it's about the optics, and it's about whose team is on it. But worse than that, the only time they feel like, I feel like they can come up with desires to vote is when it's shipping money somewhere for war. I'm telling you, the fact that people want health care, Medicare for all, can't do it. They be like, mm-hmm, oh, you want us to vote on that?
Oh, the debt.
For the lessers?
The right, debt. The national deficit.
Mm-hmm. What are you talking about? That debt deficit never pops up. That's why I always tell people, y'all, stop buying the Kool-Aid. Like, that's not, they know that they can spend this money. And it's not, they understand how federal spending works when it's for war. They magically have forgotten all the understanding they had when it comes to funding the things that would make people's lives better. Yep. And I tell people, and unfortunately, there's a sector of people who have bought into it across the spectrum. I mean, I sometimes blame libertarians for just being probably the most, you know, the free market radicals in that way. But this all, I mean, everybody, like Democrats have even bought into that, buying, oh, you know, we can't spend this money because, you know, it's our taxpayer dollars and we're going to like run out of money. And it's like impossible to do when you're a sovereign currency. And
also money isn't even real.
Right. We're not backed by, I said, like, if we were backed by gold, sure, we would having a different conversation, but we've been off the gold standard for decades. And so it's like, this is a choice at this point. Like, we could fund the things that are necessary, while being mindful of the limits and constraints of our material resources. As long as we have the resources and we have the capacity in terms of workers, we can do it. We'll be fine. Minimal, if any, inflation. But they don't care. Like, that's not the concern. It's the money. And I said, until America can move the conversation from being about money and talking about, and instead of what we can make possible, we're going to be stuck in a rut. And I don't like to be pessimistic, but I'm getting to the point where I'm like, what is it that's going to break through? I remember Marianne said this decades ago, I think on an episode of Oprah. Something, she was talking to somebody and I guess they tried to like say like, oh, we tried that or whatever. And she was talking about, have we really ever given love a try? Like essentially was talking about, we've done everything in our politics. We've been hateful. We've been negligent. We've been indifferent. We've had people who terror, all different things. But the one thing we never really tried was being loving and seeing how that could change our country and let that love manifest in the way we treat each other, the way that our policies are written, the way that our foreign policy is handled, the way that we approach issues. Like if somebody's hungry, that takes precedence over the defense industry getting their money. If somebody is without a house, that takes precedence over shipping some bomb somewhere. But you can hand wring all day. Oh, this is terrible. And it's like, we know the price tags for these things. Oh, it might be $20 billion to like eradicate like poverty or homelessness. One of these things. Yeah. And David, when I tell you, we could have paid for that tenfold based on the money we sent overseas. But we had that conversation here. Would you say, oh my God, the debt, the deficit. Crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's probably a great place to wrap up this special Valentine's Day edition of Call Me Limbo. If you enjoyed this episode, feel free to give us 5 stars on the podcast platform of choice where you listen. Feel free to get in touch with us at Call Me Limbo Pod on social media, on TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, and Threads. We've been posting more, so feel free to go give us a follow over there. Get in touch with us. Let us know how you spent your Valentine's Day. You can also support us financially. You can show us some love financially. A dollar or two goes a long way. At Call Me Limbo Pod on Patreon, Venmo, and Cash App. And, you know, Day, like I always say, you've probably heard me say it, I always say this, I am my own worst case scenario.
I'm sorry for laughing because that's both sad and funny at the same time, but totally relatable. But listen, remember, when they go low, where do we go, David?
We go to hell. So call me limbo.
Bye.